Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello In The Pink friends, it's me, Natalie Pink. I'm back with another In The Pink episode in association and partnership with Bose, helping you stay connected in this crazy time and giving away more Bose noise cancelling headphones. I will tell you at the end of this episode how you can win a pair. Okay, we've had loads of great guests already in the last couple of months, and my next is no exception. He is just a lovely, quirky, fun, very modest and yet hugely talented young man. I say he's young, he is young, he is only 20, and yet he is taking the racing world by storm. I am, of course, talking about McLaren's driver, Lando Norris, and a great British potential world champion in the making. He is in lockdown on his own, completely on his own, and has been for the entirety of lockdown. And so we're able to have a really good, long chat about his life, about his ambitions, his hopes, his dreams, his thoughts on his new teammate, and much, much more. So here he is. I know you'll love it. He's a great guy and a great interview. It's Mr. Lando Norris.
Well, hi. Good to see you.
Hello.
Still just about hanging on under lockdown?
Just about. Yeah, I think now, once everyone... There's more talk again now of obviously kind of getting driving again, and more plans are getting put in place. So now I'm getting a bit more excited of stuff to look forward to as kind of, things are becoming a bit more realistic. So I've been enjoying my time, kind of, let's say, with some things, with so far what we've been doing. But then now it's got to the point where, because it's getting more exciting about things coming up, then now it's making the things we're doing now quite, like, not boring, but just very repetitive. And yeah, it just makes you really look forward to the stuff coming up. So apart from that, it's still going great, thanks.
Now, you actually said to me that you've basically been on your own for the whole of lockdown, living on your own.
Yeah.
And when I asked you, I genuinely felt a bit gutted for you. But actually you said, nah, that's just the way I like it. What does that say about you, that actually you enjoy your own company to that extent? I mean, I'd love to be a bit more like
it. I don't know. I've always been a bit like it. I've always kind of loved... I just enjoyed spending time alone and doing things that I love to do. So, like, you know, if I was at home, say, I would still spend the whole day in my room, painting or designing or something like that. It's not the fact that I'm away from everyone else, but still the fact of just kind of being alone and listening to my music and then just doing things I enjoy, whether it's designing or playing on my simulator or chatting with my friends or something. As long as I still get to do the things that I kind of like love to do and like to do, then I'm happy. So it doesn't really matter where I am in the world. If I still get to do those things, then I'm still happy with what's going on.
Well, I always think of you as being quite a sociable creature. Like, you're good with people,
quite the opposite. No, I mean, obviously I have laughs and stuff and, you know, and maybe it does come across that way on TV, and not because it's not something I am. Because when I'm, you know, it's like me and Carlos and we're joking about and having laughs, and then that, like, I love doing as well. But then I hate the crowds, let's say, not the crowds, because I love the fans and everything, of course. But then I hate, you know, big groups of people. I hate my worst nightmare is like dinners and then having to sit next to someone and kind of get forced to speak to them. Although you really don't want to speak to anyone, kind of thing. That's what I just don't like. But I don't know. Everyone's different. Some people love being social, whereas I just love being antisocial. It's my jam.
Small talk. Yeah, small talk is a bit rubbish. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to your childhood. I know that's not that long ago for you. No. Normally, when I talk to people on this podcast, they've had a whole life, 40, 50, 60 years, but you've crammed a fair amount into your 20 years. Tell us about your family. Tell us about the drive behind you becoming a professional racing driver.
Where did it start? So it started a very long time ago, back in the day, when my dad was quite a big motorsport fan. And he liked it, and he went to go and watch a few races with his dad, so my granddad, and he loved to do it, and he wanted to do it as a kid and growing up, and he always wanted to do it, and he did some days at some like track days where he could and so on, but he couldn't afford to do it when he was growing up, and so he was a cyclist, and never got the opportunity to really go and do it as much as what he wanted to, but he still loved it. So when I was growing up, you know, we'd watch it on TV sometimes. Obviously, my dad then had Gran Turismo on the PlayStation, and me and my brother and myself, we would just spend hours and hours just driving around on Gran Turismo, racing each other, and we already started to like kind of love the competitive side of things when we were super young, and especially between obviously my brother and me. So it kind of all started there in racing each other on just a Gran Turismo or something, and it kind of slowly rose more to watching a lot of the races on TV, me getting a quad bike when I was for my fourth birthday, a little quad bike. Aww. Which my dad 4 years old, yeah.
How did you feel about that? There's no way I would let my four-year-old on a quad bike.
Well, I mean, we had horses. I wasn't forced. I'm not going to put it like that. We had to do some horse riding as well before I was four. So it was my brother, me, and my younger sister even. Between the ages of like three, four, five, six, maybe three, four, five. We would do some horse riding, all three of us at the time. I wasn't terrible, but I mean, I was super young. I didn't know whether I didn't like it. I can put it like that. I didn't like it. And, I loved watching the motorsports and kind of, I was a bit more sporty, I think, than I am now as a kid in terms of going for a run outside and spending time outside and stuff like that. But I never showed a lot of interest in horse stuff, and showed a lot more interest in the racing and things that I was watching and so on. So that's where I had my interest. And then for my fourth birthday, after not liking horse riding and complaining that I didn't want to do it anymore, then I got a little mini quad bike, not like a super fast one or anything, but just, you know, a very small one, because I was four. So I would love spending time with that, and spend hours and hours and hours on it. But then I got too dangerous to drive and had to change, or I got too dangerous to drive. Then my dad sold it without telling me. He just said, "We don't have it anymore. You can't go quad biking." So I was gutted. It's like my life was over. And so somehow he thought, then all right, we'll get you a motorbike because that's load safer. Somehow. So oh yeah, I know. This was maybe like a year, two years later. Then I went on the motorbike and I would go around on that and I would love spending time on that. All at the same time, and like me and my brother are growing our interest in racing and watching, you know, some of the GP3 races, say, or whatever it was on then, but having a big interest in Formula One. And I would say still me more than Ollie, my brother. But we loved racing at that time anyway. And I guess the main thing that kicked everything off was after school one day, possibly a Friday or something, then my dad took me and my brother to Clay Pigeon to go and watch the British Championships, the Super One at the time. And we never went to go and watch any other racing or anything like that. This was our first, like competition, let's say, we went to watch. And it looked super fun. So I wanted to, I asked if I could have a go. And my dad, after the race had finished, it must have been on a Sunday. I don't know. Maybe it's a Sunday. I'm confused. Because it was after the weekend had finished, my dad went round asking people if they had any spare kit, like race boots, race suits, gloves, and ended up pretty much getting everything from asking around for people for spare stuff, getting like race boots, which were way too big for me, considering I was like 7 at this time, or 6 years old. These race boots were like, you know, 4 sizes too big for me. Probably would fit me now. A way too big, like baggy race suits, some gloves, which are way too big for me. But, and then all my dad had to buy was a helmet. So I pretty much had all the gear. And of course, no idea. And, I would always like just run around the house wearing all of that stuff. Because I didn't have a go-kart at the time to do it, but I would use it when I got on a motorbike and things. And then for my 7th birthday, I got a Bambino go-kart. And that was pretty much day one of my journey to where I am now, I guess. That I would not stop driving it around at home. I put some cones out. In this little kind of square patch that we had. And I would just drive around the cones, create a little track or something, or an oval or something like that. And I would just drive around for hours and hours and hours. And that was it. I loved doing it. It's all I loved doing. And I loved doing it so much that my brother saw I loved doing it and had so much fun that he wanted to try it. And I still remember it. I don't know how I remember it. He tried it and he was wearing welly boots or Wellingtons. I don't know how people say it. Wellingtons, wellies. And he got in and he's a few years older than me and he was a bit taller. And this Bambino was, you know, a decent size for me. And he got in and his foot got stuck on the throttle. So he went, not like super fast, but he went like straight into where some of the horses were and straight into one of the stable doors. Then he kind of stopped it for a little bit. Like we drive for a couple of times, but he tried it and had, I guess, a bit of a crash, not fast enough to break anything. That was kind of good because he stopped doing it for a little while, which meant I got to do it even more. So I was loving it.
Because he got scared off by it.
Oh, because he got scared off by, by having a little crash.
That is so similar to me and my brother. My brother had this little tractor and he sat backwards like that, steering the tractor. So he sat on the bonnet and he was steering. Yeah. And I thought that looked like a really cool thing to do. And he wedged the pedal so that it was just full throttle. I said, let me have a go. I got in a panic and just went straight through the next door. fence.
Yeah.
Panel with me into the next door garden. And then didn't race again for ages.
Exactly. Yeah. So pretty much the same as that, yeah.
It sounds like a fun childhood anyway. It sounds idyllic.
It was good fun, especially because already by this time, me and my brother would have like a bit of a competitive time growing up, like racing each other on games and maybe on the bikes and stuff like that. So we were already getting like very competitive as two brothers. So when we kind of got the go-karts and after we kind of started to do it more again, then it got more serious and we'd try and go quicker and quicker and we'd risk more. And yeah, that's kind of how it all started and how we fell in love, both of us, with racing. And that was my childhood.
He's working, he's got a sim company now, doesn't he? Doesn't he run a company?
Yes.
Simulators?
Yeah, so he runs Cool Performance, which is the people who sell what I have here. He's doing well, actually. So he does that and also still works for some stuff with my dad on Pure Electric, which is like the scooters, electric scooters and electric bikes and so on, which is going well. So, he still like loves motorsport and he doesn't do it now. We did karting all the way until 2014. So we pretty much did seven years together. I never raced him a whole lot because he's, you know, a few years older. So I never raced him a whole lot, but we obviously started off in cadets, the lowest category together, and we'd race each other a bit. And I didn't get to race him all the way until my final year in karting in 2014. So it was like 5 years or 6 years pretty much where I never raced him. I was watching him and supporting him. So that was kind of cool to both go into our last year of karting before I moved up. And he liked car racing, but not as much as karting. Karting is very like relaxed, and as a kid, you know, it's you're going there, you're seeing a lot of your mates in some ways. You get to drive a go-kart at the same time, and it's just a really fun, relaxed kind of environment that you're in. Obviously, when it goes into cars, then it becomes a lot more serious, let's say. And he just didn't enjoy that as much. In our final year, we had some good races together. He out-qualified me twice, or was on pole twice in the European Championship, which is more poles than I had that year. We kind of got to race each other and kind of look back, I guess, on the seven previous years of us growing up together racing and all the way back to year one where it kind of all started.
That's so lovely. I think it's great when siblings have a shared passion because, it's good to enjoy something together and grow up through it together.
Okay, time for Bose's handy tips about how we can all cope a bit better over the next few weeks and potentially months under lockdown. I think that's part of the problem, isn't it? We just don't know how long this is going to last, and that lack of control over our own lives can let anxiety creep in. But hopefully, if we can all follow these little nuggets of advice, it may just help. Okay, first of all, take time for yourself to stay centered and sane. Number two, seize moments of calm. They may be few and far between, but they are out there. You just need to grab them with both hands. Number three, find your sanctuary away from the chaos. Now, if like me, your whole house is chaotic, then that might be hard, but there must be a little corner somewhere where you can take yourself off and just have a moment or two. Because remember, timeouts aren't just for kids. It's really important to take a little me time because it can go a long way. I know that sounds a bit selfish because I always feel guilty if I go off and read a book or listen to some music or have a bath or all three at the same time. But I think and hope that we all come back to our jobs in the house with the kids, with our family, as better mothers, better partners, more productive if we have taken a bit of time out.
cabin fever is real. So one way to smash that oppressive feeling is to learn something new, take up a new hobby, for example. Don't resist and fight the new norm. Embrace it. Shape it to suit you. For example, you could move rooms, change the layout at your home, create a new space dedicated to your new hobby. Make working for home work for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Don't be afraid of the silence, if indeed it exists at any point during your day. It can be truly golden after all. Try to block out unhelpful noise, and that will also reduce your anxiety. It's not where you work, it's how you work. So make it work for you with a little bit of help from Bose. Feel more, do more, be more with Bose.
Where did school fit into all of this? Because you went to Millfield, didn't you? But left quite early to focus on racing. Was it a distraction from your racing, or did you quite enjoy going to school?
School was still priority through, I would say, all the way until I went pretty much to the senior school. So what age is that? Third, 14, 15, I think. You're in the junior school, so from year two all the way to year eight. Then I was pretty much always at school. And there was little, you know, there was a few competitions. It was like karting would be put in around everything else, because it wasn't like I was doing it seriously enough, let's say, because when it started, you know, we're doing it for fun, not because, all right, my dream straight away is to reach Formula One, and my goal is to reach Formula One. What do we need to do to achieve that? Like, we just started it because I enjoyed doing it, and we had no plan or any goal in at that point. So school had a much more of a priority. But then when I kind of went to the senior school and we started traveling to Europe for a lot of the races, flying to Italy all the time. And it kind of started to become more of a serious thing. Then obviously that's when it kind of switched, and karting was taking up a lot of time anyway, because we used to drive Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That was a normal race weekend for some reason. We used to be driving on Wednesday and Thursday already. So, you know, we'd have to fly from home Tuesday evening, arrive in Italy, pretty much be away for the whole week. And that's when things started to become a lot more difficult to keep up with all of the stuff from school. You know, catch up, try and get ahead if possible. It was just very difficult. And after, you know, doing a year or so of that and trying to keep up and, you know, optimizing everything possible, it kind of became too much. And for my final year and going into GCSEs, then I had to, or did a year of homeschooling because it was too difficult to, yeah, be at school and sort and organize everything of when I'm going to be away, you know, which teachers I'm going to then have to go and see to catch up on everything, and so on. It was too many days away basically to do it like that. So I did 1 year of homeschooling, which the teacher was at home and sometimes would come away with us if it was a European round or something, and have to do schoolwork at the racetrack, which was freaking awful. Because that's the last thing I would ever want to think of doing is going and doing maths homework after finishing a race and maybe winning it. And then going, oh, I got maths homework I got to do now. That's just, that's a dream killer. So, I had a year of homeschool and then after GCSEs stopped and focused just on racing.
Was it ever a concern of yours or your parents that you didn't therefore have a plan B necessarily? Were you just so determined and positive about your racing career that you didn't worry that you didn't have a huge amount to fall back on if the racing career didn't pan out as you hoped? Has that ever bothered you?
A bit, because I guess the first, you know, few years, I felt I was too young to know what I wanted to do with my life, or if racing didn't happen, what I was going to do. I don't know. I was too young at the time to think of those kind of things. But once I could start to think, all right, what am I going to do if it kind of didn't work out? At the same time, I was kind of doing well enough that I was like, you know, I couldn't say, yeah, I'm going to make F1. And everything's going to be fine. But I could say, you know, I'm doing well enough in karting and going into cars that it's a risk, but like a risk worth taking. There's enough confidence that I was going to do well. If I didn't make it to F1, I was still, you know, a good enough driver that I could go and race GTs or I could go and race something else, say. So if I was not good enough, then there would have been a lot more risk involved and maybe I would have had to do more things to maybe fall back on. But it was a good timing for me that I could kind of think for myself what I want to do, but at the same time knowing that I think I'm good enough that maybe if I don't reach F1 or the pinnacle, yeah, maybe I can't do that, but I'll have other driving things I can fall back on and do that anyway, all the categories I can go into. So, that was a good timing in my life to kind of be able to think of what I want to do with my career.
Well, I mean, success did come in thick and fast. And I guess, would you say that 2016 was kind of a real turning point for you? You bagged, three different titles that year? And then suddenly you were kind of catapulted into... Well, under the lens of everyone in Formula One, I remember you being announced the BRDC Young Driver and then coming to see you at MTC. Do you remember I came down and interviewed you when you just been named
as
reserve driver? That was in 2017.
Yeah.
And obviously this relationship that you were developing with McLaren is a great one and there's a lot of kind of mutual belief and respect. Is that all born out of your relationship with Zak Brown or is it a wider one with the team?
No, it's, I would say it's just a completely wider one with the team. I love working with the team and being able to see progress with them. And giving them good results and driving well enough and scoring well enough kind of thing, to kind of give them what they deserve in some ways. So I'm always, and since the beginning have, maybe not the very beginning, because I was too shy and too nervous. But since very early on, I've always enjoyed kind of spending time with the mechanics, and you know, going around the different departments at McLaren, the different bays, you know, carbon shop, trim shop, paint shop, going and spending time with all of them, getting to know the people who are working there and what goes on and everything like that. I love doing that. It's not just something that I have to do or was made to do. So, the more time I got to spend with everyone, the more our relationship was kind of evolving and getting better and better. I guess I always got on well with Zach at the time. But I guess everything kind of started earlier during McLaren Autosport Award and getting the prize to then go and drive on the simulator a lot and kind of being in the factory a bit more at the same time. Then I kind of started to know more and more people. So, I think I've just got on very well with everyone and with the team and the mechanics and the engineers, which I think is very important. And I think that's why it's been such a kind of a good relationship, is because I've enjoyed working with everyone so much. Even now at the races, or maybe not so much now, but when I was doing the FP1s and stuff and I was traveling a lot with the team, but not as just a pure driver, because obviously Stoffel and Fernando were still the race drivers, but I was doing some of the FP1s here and there in Japan, in Kota. I was spending a lot of time with the mechanics and everyone and the engineers, traveling with them, which was cool, and going to the track and setting everything up. And then Sunday evening, staying there the whole night and packing the whole garage down. And all of that kind of stuff I really enjoy doing. And taking the car to bits. I've always kind of loved that side of things and being interactive with the car and getting a bit more hands-on. So, yeah, everything I've done is purely because I've enjoyed doing it and I've loved spending time with everyone and enjoyed working with them. And I think that's been a crucial part to why, the relationship between McLaren and everyone at McLaren and myself has gone so well.
Ah, you see, you do like people. You're not so antisocial after all.
Wow.
But it's interesting because, a bit like Lewis, you've kind of grown up within the team. How different do you feel now compared to, as you touched on, the shy kid that first came in?
Yeah. Very different. I guess, I mean, the feeling of within McLaren, so, you know, it's quite an intimidating place to go into, when you've still got to show yourself and prove yourself in a lot of ways. So before I was with McLaren, you know, you walk in there and it's just a lot of white corridors and it's a freaking huge place. And you're seeing the bosses walking around and you're seeing the engineers, or you see one of the drivers. So being young and kind of walking through there before you're really like part of the team is just, it's very intimidating. So the more I kind of went, the more I kind of started to know everyone. And the transition all the way to now is so much better, because now I walk in and it's just a really cool atmosphere, one, to walk into, an atmosphere which is a lot better than what it was a few years ago. I can walk in there and it feels much more like home compared to, you know, a little kid walking in having no clue where to go in the place. So, I guess like the relationship has come a long way. I don't know. It's weird to think of four years of being at McLaren and kind of starting off as, the sim driver and then reserve driver, test and development and then reserve driver and then the race driver. Every year was something new to try and achieve. So, it's already been quite a cool journey.
Yeah, and I mean, you touched on it then. At every point, you have proved yourself worthy of their investment in you. And obviously, your rookie year in Formula One, you had a lot of bad luck, but you really did prove yourself. I mean, there was some real highlights. I'm thinking kind of Bahrain.
Yeah.
France, you were voted driver of the day, even though you didn't finish quite where you where you deserved to. You were promoted, weren't you, after Daniel was ticked off?
Yes. Yeah.
Naughty boy. And then Austria, Belgium, you know, you did have some very strong races. So I know that it's frustrating not to be racing now in 2020, but it's probably given you a little bit more time to reflect on last year.
Yeah.
How the dust has settled on it. How do you feel about your first year with the team racing alongside Carlos?
I'm very happy with, I'm proud of myself. That's a bit weird, but I'm happy with how I did, I think, last year. And I wasn't, obviously, at the end of last year, and I was quite disappointed in a lot of things. But I think having so much time to kind of think about things and reflect on a lot of stuff, and seeing a lot more of the data behind everything and the statistics.
It's a hard word to say, isn't it?
I can't do it. I really struggle.
I did.
So I struggled the first one. I don't know why I keep thinking there's like three S's in the word. Statistics. But yeah, in them, then it kind of gives you a bit more belief in also then what the engineers are saying and what the bosses are saying. And because it's always different, you know, seeing it from the outside rather than being the extra driver. It's hard to know what everyone on the outside is thinking and seeing. So when you kind of look into things a bit more and, you know, I guess the brutal facts is Carlos finished where P6 in the Drivers' Championship and I finished P11, then, you know, it just doesn't look amazing at all, does it, from the outside? And for someone that doesn't know what's going on, then you'd be like, oh, Carlos has absolutely smashed Lando. And it's just the fact of thinking that, which annoyed me and I wasn't happy with at all. But when you kind of, after sitting down for a bit and reviewing everything a lot more, and, you know, looking at a lot of the races where I did have problems. So, you know, France would have been P7, Spa would have been P6, Montreal would have been maybe top seven. There's a few more where just if you just added these points up, it'll be a lot of points. And I'd be a lot higher up in the Drivers' Championship than what I would have been. So I guess it's the same for everyone. And Carlos had some unlucky races where he would have scored even more points and so on. But there was a lot of my bad races where I had problems, like technical problems or something, but all the races when I was doing the best in some ways and I was going to score the most points and have my best results. So after kind of seeing a lot more on that and having the problems that I had in a lot of races, then I think I could be a lot happier with how I did as a driver and how I performed throughout the whole year, especially my first year in Formula One comparing to his fourth. So of course I'm never and I qualified him. Yes, let's go back. Let's just talk about that. So like then, you know, there's a lot of positives. And yeah, qualifying parts and a lot of the race results, I was very happy with. So there were a lot of positives, but as a driver, you just always hate seeing your name below, well, one, below your teammates, but two, in a position that, you know, if someone just sees it from the outside and doesn't have a clue about what goes on within the team and the problems that you've had, then it makes you look even worse than reality kind of thing. So I guess thinking of that and thinking what people do what might think of me, if you look at it from that perspective, then that was the thing that that annoyed me more, basically.
I don't think you have to worry too much about the people that don't know, because the people that
know.
Get it. How useful was the good relationship that you developed with Carlos in sort of helping you bed into the team and to give you that confidence?
I think it was very important because it was weird because obviously it was my, you know, I guess my third year really integrating with the team. My first proper year as a driver, but my second year really working with the guys, because I also did the FP1s in the year before. So I was with mechanics and engineers a lot. And then the year after, I'm the driver. So in some ways, you know, I was much more at home than what Carlos was. So in some ways, I helped him kind of adapt to the environment of McLaren a bit more. But at the same time, obviously, I learned a lot of things from him, with him being in his fourth year of Formula One. So there was a lot of help both ways in driving, and we wouldn't have finished P4 in the Constructors' Championship. We might have done, but very unlikely we would have finished P4 in the Constructors' Championship if we didn't help each other as much as we did, kind of thing, and work with each other as much as we did. So I guess that year, knowing that, if our both of our goals is to win championships and win races, then it's a bit hard with what's gone on this year. But last year, I guess, knowing that we're going to both be in McLaren for this year, then we had a kind of a bit of a longer term vision of, right, we need to do well as a team and not just individually so much. That's our best chance to make the car better. And obviously they earn a bit more money, and yeah, then the future can be better for us. So that was kind of our goal, and we worked together very well in doing that. I think that was a crucial part to how we both did as well as we did. But at the same time, it's just really good fun. You know, it was just good fun. I have a lot of good memories and things that I just love doing, and good laughs throughout the whole year, which made it very memorable, but also just very enjoyable at the same time. So it's kind of like a win-win, that you can enjoy something so much. And it's not a job to me in a lot of ways. Although it's classed as a job, it's not a job, because I get to just have so much fun compared to a lot of people that probably don't enjoy their job so much. So I'm in a lucky position, but it's just been a great time for both of us in getting to work with each other. And it's a shame this year that we've missed out on a second year and a second opportunity to kind of work on it and see how it went.
And how will you feel if the rumours are true that he's off to Ferrari and you'll have a new teammate?
Bit sad. I hope that we still get to have some races this year at least. It'll be sad basically if he does leave, because I think we've got along really well, and we just had a lot of good laughs, and it's made it very enjoyable for both sides, for him and also for me. So I don't know. It makes it quite like a nice environment to work in at the same time between both of us, that we come in and we help each other, but we're still competitive and want to beat each other. Everyone knows that. I'm going to kind of miss that. And I don't know, I've not really experienced possibly having a different teammate or something like that. So it's kind of just changed things up in a way that I don't really know too well. And of course I'm going to miss him if he does go, but we still have a few more races this year where things will be normal and we'll still be working with each other and trying to beat each other and having good laughs. So I still look forward to all of that.
Making me emotional.
Aww.
Oh, it's by the time this podcast goes out, we may well know what's happening with the Ferrari seat. But it's looking, it's looking possible, likely in fact, that you might get Daniel Ricciardo. And I've got a sneaky feeling that you two will get on very well as well. How would you feel about partnering with him?
I know, I've not really thought about it, to be honest. I don't know. He's a really funny guy and we've had a lot of good laughs. We don't speak all of the time. But in the few times that we've kind of spent time together in press conferences and track parades and stuff like that. We've had some really funny moments together. So, from that side of things, I would look forward to it, but I don't know what's happening yet. So I'm hoping everything kind of still stays as it is, because I think for the team as well, it's a very good environment at the moment. And everyone's working very well as a whole team. So yeah, I think the main thing is to try and continue that in the end of the day.
Yeah, be fascinating to see.
In the Pink and Bose really want to help during this lockdown. Now, whether we can or not is another question, but we can try, and we're going to do that by giving away some more Bose noise cancelling headphones. To win them, just share mini anecdotes from your time in lockdown and give us some feedback on this series. Always put in the hashtag Bose and tag in a couple of mates to do the same. And you never know, those headphones could be yours. Good luck, stay safe and stay connected.
Do you know something I've always wanted to ask you? Where does the inspiration for the name Lando come from?
My mum just kind of came up with it.
Did she make the name up?
Yeah, because she's never watched Star Wars, so she doesn't know who Lando Calrissian is. So we didn't come from that. So she said she came up with it, yeah.
And why? Just because she wanted to get creative?
yeah, I guess. I mean, my mum's from Belgium, so like, I don't know, we all kind of have a bit odd names in some ways, or different names, apart from Ollie. But I mean, my sisters are called Flo and Siska, same as my mum. And not just Florence, it's just Flo. So I don't know. My mum's just come up with weird names.
It's got a good ring to it. Was there ever a consideration that you might race under the Belgian flag?
No, I think I've always, I lived in the UK for my whole life. And the only thing I really do is, on the top of my helmet where I have the number 4, then I have my 50-50 split of half a British flag, half a Flemish flag. So, yeah, I don't know what qualifies for you to kind of have the different flags, but, I guess although I am 50-50 and I'm 50% Flemish, 50% British, at the same time, I've lived in the UK my whole life, and I speak a lot of English and not very much Flemish.
But can you speak Flemish?
Like a little bit.
Go on, say anything in Flemish to me. Go on.
I can say like a little bit. So like a little bit is a kleine beetje.
Well, that means a little bit.
Yeah, like a tiny bit. Kleine, small. Kleine is like small. Kleine bitch, tiny bit.
Hi, my name is Lando Norris, and I'm a racing
driver. Yeah, I don't know, I just say that.
if someone says, can you speak Flemish, you go,
yeah, I mean, I can count. I can say like, I can count. And I can understand a bit of it. So if they're talking, I kind of understand things. But I just can't, I mean, I can hardly speak English very well. So I really struggle to speak Flemish.
Now, digressing completely, I was thinking about you the other day because I was watching The Last Dance. And have you seen it yet? The Netflix
nope.
series?
Oh, that's the
I want to see it.
Basketball one?
Yeah.
Michael Jordan?
Yeah, about the Chicago Bulls. And there was, I haven't quite finished it yet, but the episode that I was on was just about him talking about the press. And I remember thinking, you know, like just seeing him in the massive huddle of press, which you will no doubt have as your career progresses. It reminded me a bit of Lewis and the press, the pressure that the press put on him. And he was basically just like worn down by it. And there was almost a part of me that felt that sort of cringe slightly, that thought, God, that's me in that huddle. That's me like poking the microphone in.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know, it sort of made my toes curl slightly, but when I think back to that time when I saw you MTC in 2017 and I talk to you now, and I think, you know, you are just such a lovely bloke, and there's just a kind of a kindness, a wholesomeness there, obviously a passion to drive. Do you ever feel, and do you feel now as if you're changing because of the increased pressure that you're under, particularly with the spotlight being on you? Do you feel defensive in a way? Do you feel as if your guard is creeping up slightly because of the intrusion of the press? How do you feel as a sportsman with the world looking at you? And it's only going to get it's only going to ramp up more and more and more, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I don't think, like, I don't think much of it at all, to be honest. The only really thing, you know, I had to, like, be a bit more wary about is, like, you know, comments or privacy things. So, you know, if I'm streaming or something, or I say something to someone, and if it's a bad thing, then it can very easily, you know, get put out there, and then it can make me look really bad, basically. So, not that I say anything bad, of course, mm-hmm. but you know, there's just a lot of things that can very easily not be taken out of context, even. But, you know, you just say something and someone hears it that shouldn't hear it, then it can all go very wrong very quickly. So, you just, yeah, you got to just be a bit more careful at times. And you know, when I'm like streaming and things like that, there's always probably someone listening, and things get put on then Twitter or Facebook or whatever, which spark a lot of controversy sometimes. So yeah, I guess things like that you got to be a bit more careful with, but I don't feel more pressure from it. I don't think of it in a negative way in any way, to be honest. It's just part of doing what I do. That's about it. I don't think of it in many other ways, to be honest.
It's funny because there is a fine line between, like, when you're honest and giving off the cuff remark, people love it because they see it as showing your true personality.
Yes.
You've kind of rehearsed media answers because they just feel too polished. They don't feel like tapping into your soul. But equally, there is just a very fine line between, like, going just a little bit too
exactly far, yeah,
you know, making it tricky for yourself going forward. So listen, I guess that every young racer's ambition, dream is to be world champion. Is that kind of something that you think about? And if so, see yourself or dream of doing it with McLaren, or do you not even kind of pay attention to that? Are you one of these guys that's, you know, you're just focusing on the next time you go racing?
I mean, I would love to, and I think about it, and that is my aim. You know, one, it was to get into Formula One, and if I made it to Formula One, I'd be very happy. Two is, if I got into Formula One, my aim is to win a world championship, or to at least win some races in F1. So that's my aim, and that's everything I'm working towards now. And yeah, I don't think I could be happier if I would just love to do it with McLaren, I guess. With where I am now and the atmosphere and how everything is, that's my dream, is to win it with McLaren, with the people I'm working with now. That's what I would want more than anything at the moment. So I guess I do think of that, and that's my aim, and that's everything I kind of work towards. But at the same time, situation is obviously very different. So, you know, there's always the comparison of Lewis joining McLaren when he was young, and me joining McLaren when I was young, and kind of being the young driver coming up through the team. But of course, the situation from when Lewis was in McLaren and in F1 to where it is now is completely different. And he was in a championship winning car from day one. You could do a lot more testing back then than you can in F1 now. So, you know, when he arrived at his first race, he would have done countless amount of test days. He would have been a lot more prepared than even I was after doing all the FP1s and everything. And he was, you know, he was in a car that was competitive enough to win the championship in his first year. Mm-hmm. So, of course, like, everyone always kind of compares it to that. But, you know, it's very different that I'm coming in with a lot less testing than what he would have done as a young driver. Still a lot, and, you know, getting the opportunity to do all FP1s a couple of years ago already. But then, you know, the car is nowhere near capable of winning a race, you know, let alone a championship. So you do have to take kind of some things differently. And, you know, I never know, you know, you never know the story of where you're going to end up in future years and so on. But at the same time, yeah, everything I do now is focused for McLaren and trying to help them, and obviously trying to help myself at the same time. If I can help them, they can help me. So, yeah, that's all I want to be thinking of now, is trying to win races and win a championship with McLaren, and get back to doing that instead of being P6, P7, P8, wherever we are.
I mean, you must be so encouraged, though, by the step forward last year. And if you continue on that trajectory, there's nothing to say that McLaren can't get back on the podium or even winning races very soon.
Yes, of course. But it's not as easy as that. It's not just like, oh, yeah, we did this and we moved in this direction, that we can just do the same next year and it's going to be even better. Yeah, it's not as simple as that. So,
what is that feeling then? How competitive do you think? I mean, it's so difficult when we haven't, you know, we only saw testing in Barcelona. That's all we've seen. Reliability was obviously a big plus there. But what's your gut feeling as to how good the car can be this year?
I don't know. It's from what we saw in pre-season testing, I would say we weren't in a too dissimilar place to where we were last year. That is extremely close. You know, I think where we did very well last year was with the consistency of the team, and, you know, decent results and having P6 and P7 between me and Carlos, and both having top 10s and you know, having double points finishes a lot of the time. And I think that's where we really outdid them, and strategies and stuff like that is where we did very well as a team last year. But we didn't always have, you know, the fourth best car last year. There's a lot of races when Renault were much quicker, or Haas were much quicker, Sauber were quicker. So it wasn't like, you know, all last year we had the fourth best car, and therefore we finished fourth in the constructors. There's a lot of times when we did better on pure non-car related skills, basically. So the pit stops and strategies and everything like that. So it's hard to say just how you're going to do as a team based on car performance, because there's a lot of other things that can come into play. But yeah, I don't think we're competitive enough to race the top three teams. I think the top three are still very quick. And obviously the pink Mercedes as well, who look extremely fast and were quicker than us in pre-season testing. So I think it's going to be very close when you get back to racing. I think you're going to have the midfield pack who are still extremely close, and you go from one weekend to another and it's going to be jumbled up and mixed, and you can't, close enough that you can't just say McLaren are going to be fourth, or this team's going to be fifth and this team's going to be sixth, which is kind of cool and a cool thing to think about, is that it's going to be close. But yeah, it's also not a nice thing to think about, because we want to be confident enough to say, all right, we are going to be finishing fourth in this race, or we have a chance to go for the third best team or something like that. So there's still a lot of work we got to do, but I don't think we're in a bad position at all to fight for at least fourth in the constructors again.
Well, I know there'll be a lot of people, because there just seem to be so many McLaren fans in this country. Like, even people that might support another team always want McLaren to do well, don't they? It's great.
Yes.
There's such a, yeah.
No, it's nice. It's nice. And I think, like, at the same time, every driver kind of wants to drive for McLaren at some point. So yeah, for me to be like in that position already, and to be having all of these fans supporting the team and then supporting me at the same time, it's really cool. So, you know, going to like Silverstone and having that zone race for both me and the team, then that makes it really special. So I don't know, we'll see how we can do this year. We'll hopefully find out in not too long.
Great stuff. Thank you so much for your time, Lando. It's lovely to talk to you as always. And I hopefully see you at a racetrack very soon.
Yes. How long? One and a half months?
July the 5th, we're hoping, Austria.
Still a long time, to be honest, isn't it?
There's a lot of papaya in the stands in Austria, all there for you.
Yeah, all the McLaren fans, exactly.
Thank you, Lando.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time, Lando. Lovely to spend it with you, albeit via Zoom during this lockdown. And as you will have picked up, it was only really hours after we did our chat that he found out Carlos was indeed going to Ferrari. So he is no doubt feeling a bit blue about that. It's been amazing to see their friendship and competitiveness coexist during the time at McLaren. But also, as you will have heard, the prospects of Daniel joining is one that obviously he is looking forward to. So that's great stuff. And you can still win those noise-cancelling headphones from Bose. So just let us know who you've loved hearing from, who you'd like to hear from. Tag in a friend and add the hashtag Bose on Instagram and they could be coming to you. Plenty more interviews on the way, including Sir Chris Hoy, Michelle Moan, and who else have we got? Kate Thornton, Will Greenwood, and indeed Carlos Sainz. So plenty more on the way very soon in the pink. But in the meantime, stay safe and stay connected. Bye for now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.